But for regular customers, we're back to Job again. We're going to start into Job chapter 38 this morning. Basically covering most of the chapter, but I just want to read the first 18 verses. All the way through the book of Job, we've heard Job speak. We've heard his supposed comforting friends speak. And all the way through, Job is being as if only God would speak. And as we start chapter 38, God does just that. If you have a little heading in your Bible, it might well be at chapter 38, simply, the Lord speaks. And here's how chapter 38 begins. Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm. He said, "Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? Or what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy? Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb, when I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness, when I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place? When I said, 'This far you may come and no farther, here's where your proud waves halt.' Have you ever given orders to the morning or shown the dawn its place, that it might take the earth by the edges and shake the wicked out of it? The earth takes shape like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. The wicked are denied their light, and their upraised arm is broken. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all this." So God speaks to Job and in turn speaks to us through his word, and we thank him for its truth today. Memories of childhood and school days are, for me, dogged with some very unpleasant memories. For those who were in education, I was one of the bad boys, although I did develop a conviction over my school days that being the tallest in school meant the headmasters decided if they got the big boy under control, the rest would all fit into place afterwards. So I do remember being hauled up by the headmaster because I had done something as radical as taking magic tricks into the RE class. They're far more interesting what the RE teacher did for us, and all the rest of the boys around me conferred with that. It was really exciting, but the headmaster took me into his office and gave me a long lecture that I should know better of all people, and why it was totally wrong to do such things. It would distract the poor minister who come in to do RE. I remember being hauled into the headmaster's office for running across the school playground in Kenya. That was an unforgivable sin during lunchtime. I was one of many who were doing exactly the same thing, but I was the biggest, I was the tallest, I got collared, I got the lecture, long lecture, followed by the plimsoll thereafter. And such was life, learning to take long lectures from headmasters, but I was guilty most of the time. I reckon Job must have felt a bit like that when God started to speak in chapter 38 of this book. He'd been longing for weeks. We're not sure how long this whole time scale took. It might even have been by now months, since in the heavenly places God had challenged Satan to find someone who could stand more for God than Job could. Satan had issued the challenge, well, if you take all the good things away from Job, he'll soon wish he'd never known you. God, he only loves you because you're good to him, not just because you're Job. Business had gone, livestock had gone, most of the family was gone, health was gone, and Job all the way through been crying out, if only God would speak. If only from heaven a voice would come to justify me, to say, yes, this is one of my prime subjects on the earth, then my poor friends would shut up and I would know that God wasn't judging me for some wrong I'd done. There's some other purpose in all that was happening to me. And then suddenly God begins to speak. It's a bit risky sometimes, isn't it, to ask God to speak to us? You usually do think, well, we want you to speak, God, because we know exactly what you would say. And what you would say is exactly what we want you to say. And I think that Job was a bit like that. But as we enter this chapter, we find that both in style and content, Job was in for a big shock when God first broke the silence of those weeks or months and began to speak, particularly to Job, but to all who were prepared to listen to him. So I start by thinking on our first heading simply, God is in the noise of the whirlwind. That's how chapter 38 begins. All the others have at last taken to being silent. Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm, is how the NIV translates it. Others the whirlwind, others the hurricane. The point is, here is this huge noise of nature erupting into chaos. And the voice of God comes through that. God thundering out his word to Job. It's not often how Christians portray God speaking. We often like, and I've done it myself, to preach on those words from Kings where God comes to Elijah and speaks to him in that still, small voice. And at that point, God was not in the wind and God was not in the fire and God was in that still, small voice. The little song, Our Blessed Redeemer, he breathed his tender last farewell, goes to speak in these words. He came in semblance of a dove with sheltering wings outspread. The holy balm of peace and love on earth to shed. And his, that gentle voice we hear, soft as a breath of Eden that checks each fault and calms each fear and speaks of heaven. And I reckon Job wanted that kind of voice from God. Elihu and his other friends have kept on saying God isn't silent, God does speak. But Job's problem has been that God doesn't seem to have been speaking to him. He hasn't heard God speak. That still small voice hasn't been around. And he's quite sure that if God would only speak, God would let his friends and Job know that he understands what's going on. He would justify Job's belief and convictions of the past. He would speak words of hope and words of restoration and words of renewal for this wonderful man of God. And I reckon the last thing that Job ever expected was that when God would speak, he would speak in a hurricane. It wouldn't be that still, small, gentle voice that speaks of heaven. It would be the thundering noise of a raging storm that reached its crescendo with the thunderbolts shining and speaking from heaven and this great noise erupting from the earth. And in the whirlwind, God speaks to Job. Reminded that God knows best not just what to say, but how to speak to us. It's poignant for Job. that God speaks out of this whirlwind. Quite like that original translation of King James, because it brings us back right to the very first chapters of Job. When the news came back of the different calamities that Satan was bringing into force in Job's life, in a sense that the great crescendo there is when the word comes back that his sons and his daughters have died. Remember how it was recorded in chapter 1, verse 19? Suddenly, a mighty whirlwind swept in from the desert and struck the four corners of the house. It collapsed on them, and they are dead. And ever since that's happened, it's as though the whole of Job's life has been in the middle of a metaphorical whirlwind. And all he wanted was God to speak softly to him, for God to speak gently to him, for God to come along, give a wee pat on the shoulder and says, okay, Job, everything is going to be fine, Job. And yet here's God who speaks to Job now in the hurricane, in a storm, in the whirlwind. And sometimes God does speak to us in the storms that smash into our lives. Job thought that God had been silent for all these weeks, but Job hasn't been listening in the right places. God has been speaking, and God's going to show him how he has been speaking, but Job hasn't been listening. And more than that, Job has made assumptions about how God would speak that were totally up the chute, totally wrong. Those of you who were around in the Demis Roussos era, the 60s and 70s, may well remember that first time that you saw him on the TV screen, this 22-stone guy from Greece or Egypt, I think he was. And he kind of opened his mouth and music started playing. You imagine this great, big, deep bass voice would come. And then you got this tiny little forever and forever note that came out. And it just wasn't what you expected. And sometimes what we expect from God isn't how God actually speaks at all. Throughout Christian history, we tended to make our churches and our chapels places that are typified by quietness and calmness. And we create this atmosphere, this thinking, this underlying psychology that God's a God who is best at work with us when all is calm and serene and quiet. And don't get me wrong, God is a God who did speak to some of his people at some times in the still, small voice. There are times when God does come to us and his voice is peaceful, his spirit with us is gentle, and the very atmosphere creates around with us stills our troubled spirits. But God isn't a one-way-only God. And sometimes God comes, he does, into Job's life through the literal whirlwind at the beginning and through this powerful, noisy whirlwind of chapter 38. And out of the whirlwind, God spoke to Job. And sometimes when life seems to be stormy, when it seems as though everything is chaotic, when it seems as though the whirlwind and the hurricane of life is battering us, and we think, oh, if only this would stop. And then, in the calm, I could hear God. We actually need to say, no, sometimes it is that hurricane, sometimes it is that storm, sometimes it is the very chaotic moment that God is using to speak into our situations and say, this is me. Listen to me now. Hear my voice amongst the storm. God spoke in the whirlwind to Job. God and the noise of the whirlwind. Secondly, God and the origins of the universe. I love that not just the manner in which God came to Job and spoke to him, but the content of what God said to Job is dramatic and so unexpected. It wasn't just that there was no peace and calm and quiet and serenity in nature around Job. It was that the message that God brought to Job was not full of words of comfort. He didn't say, come on, Job, you don't need to worry. I've got this all in a big plan, and here's my way of dealing with you now. It's all going to be better for you. There are no technical explanations for Job about the causes and cures of suffering. Folk who've looked through Job over the years have often complained. They say, well, you know, here's a book that deals with the big issue of why do good people suffer, and yet I can't find an explanation there. We've got the kind of technical stuff at the start, but Job never gets told why. Isn't God a bit unfair? Why not some kind of explanation to him? But there are no soft words of comfort. There are no technical explanations of the cause of suffering for Job here. No uplifting words of hope and recovery. Instead, God takes Job on a whirlwind tour of the universe. And God unleashes against Job a torrent of questions. Which is actually quite interesting because, remember, all the way through, Job is saying, if only I could question God. I have a few things I want God to answer here. And instead, when God starts to speak, it's in style and manner something unexpected in the whirlwind. It is in content unexpected because it doesn't touch any of the issues that Job was wanting answered. And it's full of God asking Job questions, rather than the other way around. So you have chapter 38, verse 4. Were you there? It takes him right back to the origins of the universe. Were you there, Job? Do you see it all happen? Do you comprehend it all? Verse 4. Do you know how it came into being? Verse 6. Can you control the planets and the constellations? Verse 31. Do you understand all the laws that govern the outer reaches of the universe? Verse 33. And the questions just keep on coming. 70 or more questions altogether fired at Job. Most of them rhetorical questions that don't need an answer because on every case, God is saying, Job, you don't know what you're talking about. Job, you haven't a clue. And the answer to every question God places to Job would require Job to say, no, I do not know. No, I am ignorant. No, I don't understand that. No, I don't comprehend that. No, I was not there. No, this is out of my orbit of experience and reality. So the Job who wanted to ask God questions is the one who now hears God speak, and it's God who puts him on the spot with his barrage of questions. The Living Bible has a lovely translation of 38 verse 2. Why is God speaking to Job? Why are you using your ignorance to deny my providence? And that, in a sense, sums up God's content to Job during these next chapters. Not just this chapter, but all the way through to chapter 41. Why have you been using your ignorance to deny my providence? The origins of the universe were mysteries that Job could not begin to unravel. Not just because Job didn't have all the benefits of modern day scientific and technological discovery. Not just because Job didn't have access to Google to find out all the information that would have answered some of these questions. But Job would have had to answer every question with a negative because no one, even yet in our world, no one knows the answer to these questions that God was plying Job with. No one in the world knows for sure when the universe came into existence. We may have people who have a strong view on a young earth, strong view on a kind of reasonably young earth, and some who believe it's billions and billions of years. What we don't have is anybody who knows exactly when, which is what Job was asked. Were you there when it happened? answer? No. No one in the world knows how it came into being. Most of us might well take a very literal, strong view on the words of Genesis 1 as describing God bringing everything into being by the word of his power. But we don't know how that happened. We haven't found a scientific formula that takes divine energy from the mouth of God and translates it into the existence of the whole universe of which we are such a tiny part. No one in the world knows why things became as they did. No one in the world knows how vast the universe is. I think it's good when we have these discussions and talks and debates between Christians and non-Christians about the world, about the universe, to actually remember and to remind ourselves and them that no one knows how big the universe is. How is Job to handle this torrent of questions from God? More important, why did God adopt such an approach with Job? Why didn't God come to Job and say, Job, here's why this whole series of events started in your life. Job, here is the end product of all the suffering you've come through. Why did God adopt this approach of this tour, question-wise, through the origins of the universe? Several issues, I think, and I think the main point here is simply God knows what he's doing. Job, you don't understand how, you don't understand when, you don't understand why, you have no solution to all these vast major issues about the universe of which you're a part, but I am the God who knows what he is doing. Here's a God who's in charge of more galaxies than we can number in our world today. If you do Google how many galaxies there are, you'll find that there's 100 billion known galaxies, as far as a scientist can guess. But some are saying we think it might be 500 billion galaxies in our universe. And what God is doing is saying, I am the God who created all that by the word from my mouth. I am the God who handles things on that mega scale. I'm a God who's almighty enough, great enough, big enough to handle all that that you see out there and all that that is beyond human vision and scientific probing. And I keep it in order. Can you do that, Job? Albert Einstein has a fascinating quote. I'll read it in full to you. He says, the human mind is not capable of grasping the universe. We're like a little child entering into a huge library. The walls are covered to the ceilings with books in many different languages. The child knows that someone must have written the books. It does not know who or how. It doesn't understand the languages in which they are written. But the child notes a definite plan in the arrangement of the books, a mysterious order, which it does not comprehend, but only dimly views. I think what God is saying as he asks these questions to Job is, if I can handle the creation and ordering of 100 billion galaxies out there, Job, do you not think I can handle your personal situation? If I can put every single star in its place and have them fixed in such orbits around in their own galaxies that they don't all implode on each other, explode out of each other, do you not think that your life is secure in my hands? God in the origins of the universe. Thirdly, God on the order in creation. But it's not just the God who founded the world, however he did it. or created it by whatever means his power produced. But it's also about how God keeps things running. God's order in creation. So there's a mixture of verses and a mixture of issues that overlap during these verses, but you can follow me through a number of questions that deal with not how God brought things into being at the start, but how they are maintained thereafter. Verse 8, could you have put limits on the ocean and say, thus far you come and no further? You remember that King Canute had that issue put to him. If he was the king, all-powerful, could he go down to the shore and issue a command that would keep the waves coming in any further, which he found himself unable to do? Not surprisingly, you might say. What was interesting, Canute is supposed then to have said the following: let all men know how empty and worthless is the power of kings. For there is none worthy of the name but God, whom heaven, earth, and sea obey. I think that's pretty close to where God's at here, partway through chapter 38. Not just that God had created it, but he's saying, who stops the waves coming and deluging the whole world? It's the God who heaven, earth, and sea obey. Well, verse 11, God's questioning to Job, could you have controlled the oceans so they remain as they are? Well, verse 16, have you been to see how deep the sea is? I try to remember, there's somebody here recently sort of queried, set out a question, maybe anniversary time or Bible week, about what the deepest place in the sea was. And I think it was Noel who managed to get the answer right in the Challenger Deep. Or is it the other way around? You asking a question, were you? Okay. And just Noel somewhere there brought out his brilliant knowledge of the Challenger Deep being the deepest place in the sea. I love it when I go online and find that actually scientists aren't quite sure whether it is or not. Nobody knows the deepest part of the ocean. 80% of the world's oceans have yet to be mapped. Here we are able to send spacecraft to Mars and beam back live photographs from that planet. And yet we don't know how deep the deepest part of the seas are in our own planet. Exactly the question that God puts to Job. Have you been there to see how deep the sea is? Answer, no. Do you know how to control the light and the darkness? Verses 12 and verse 19, it's poetic language. God uses the poetic form here. But you get the message. Have you ever given orders to the morning? Or what's the way to the abode of light? When you've woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning on a dark winter's day, think, oh, this is miserable. Do you have the power to say, come on, dawn, time to shine, time to wake us all up, time to be bright and cheery? No, we don't have that power to control the light and the darkness. Do you know the dimensions of the planet, verse 18? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? And I love the fact that most of the rest of the chapter deals with one big question. Do you know how to control the weather? And that's so good for us British people. Here's that constant topic of conversation. What's the weather going to be like tomorrow? You've all looked already to see whether it's going to be a good week next week and whether you can have a bit of a September Indian summer. We hope you Indian folks are providing Indian summers for us this year. So what does God say to Job? Well, come on, what about the snow, the ice, the hail, the rain, the thunder, the lightning? Are you able to control those, Job? Are you in charge of them? Can you even decide when it would be good for it to rain and when it would be good for it to snow, when it would be good for the rivers to ice up, when it would be good for the lakes to ice up, when it would be good for them to thaw again? Do you have the ability to run the weather patterns for our world? Would you know how to do it, Job, if you could do it? We can just about predict the weather with our satellite technology today. We certainly can't control the weather. And what's God's point? Not just Job, I am the creator who's big enough to handle 500 billion galaxies, so don't you believe that I could handle your situation. But God is now saying, I am the God who controls all that happens in the world on the mega scale. Job, you didn't invent or create these things. I did. Job, you don't understand how these things work. I do. Job, you can't control these things. I do. Job, you couldn't handle an explanation of these things if I gave them to you. I do understand them. I can explain them. God's not only big enough to control this universe, but able to keep it under, not only able to create it, but able to keep it under control as well. So God's been speaking all along, not with direct answers to specific questions that Job has been wrestling with, but I think what God's now saying to Job is, you know, if only you had looked around you at this vast universe, if only you'd seen how I work, I was speaking to you in those things. You kept saying God's silent. You kept thinking I was doing nothing, saying nothing, communicating nothing, but I was saying something all the time. If you just looked at what I made and what I control and what I sustain and what providentially I bring you every day of your life, God's voice was there in creation. Creation proclaims to every creature on earth, God knows what he is doing. Creation proclaims every day we live in it, God's big enough, strong enough, and wise enough to get it right all the time. But you might say, well, isn't God still kind of wee bit heartless? Now, here's a poor, suffering man. Here's a man in profound grief. Here's a man in deep personal pain, physically, emotionally, and as we said a couple of weeks ago, spiritually as well. Things aren't like they used to be for him. Isn't God a bit heartless in this kind of headmaster's telling off role of Job? Okay, come on, Job. Were you there when the world was created? Were you there when it was put on its foundations? Do you know all that stuff? No, you don't. Were you the one who's able to control the weather patterns and control the planetary systems? Are you in charge of things? No, you're not. Isn't it a bit heartless of God to talk that way? I don't think God's point was just to dazzle Job with his own greatness and Job's tiny insignificance, though I'm sure Job felt that. I don't think this is just about baffling Job or overawing Job. When I was taken to the headmaster's study and given those lectures, the intention was that I go out feeling a wee bit smaller than when I had paraded around the playground previously. It was intended to bring me down to where I ought to be. I don't think that's what God's doing here. I don't think it's simply trying to silence the questions and queries of Job's heart and mind. I think the point God's making to Job is, you know, Job, in everyday life, you trust me as God. The fact of life, Job, is every day of life as creator, as sustainer, as provider, actually, your whole life is a life of dependence and trust and faith in me. You don't have to understand what I'm doing. You don't need a technical explanation of how I bring things to pass. You just go through life accepting what comes from my hand and enjoying it. Job has never been given an explanation from God on how the planets orbit around the earth. He's never been told how the clouds move from one part of the earth to the next, providing rain in proper amounts for it. But Job lives in a state of practical and contented, trusted dependence on God. He just accepts it's going to happen because God's in charge of his universe. He doesn't get up in the morning to eat his cornflakes, assuming it's cornflakes that Job eats in the morning, and say, well, God, I'm not going to eat these cornflakes because I don't know how the corn grew, and I can't explain the processes by which that corn was planted in the ground, died, and came to life again. And until you explain it to me, God, I'm not going to accept my cornflakes today. I'm sure you didn't think that way this morning either. Job didn't refuse to drink the water that came from the clouds and refreshed the land and kept him alive because he didn't understand the whole scientific process that lies behind evaporation and condensation. He didn't say, God, I'm not going to touch this water until you give me a full explanation first. He trusted God. He lived his life in dependence upon God providing what was needed. If we can leave God to keep the whole universe in perfect balance, we can learn to leave our troubled experiences with him as well. Why did Job need to understand why he was suffering? All he needed to do was trust a God who had provided for him, cared for him, loved him, held this whole vast universe in his hands, and done good things for him in the past. He didn't need to understand why it had happened. He didn't need to understand when it would end. He didn't need to understand what the product or reasoning behind it was. All he needed to do was to trust the God who is mighty and good and trustworthy. And that's why I think Job, and we'll say more about this in the next couple of weeks, Job never got the technical explanation from God of what was happening. What God gave to Job was a view of a universe held in such perfect balance by a creator and sustaining God that God can be trusted. The trouble is that you and I are awful, awful like Job, aren't we? We want the explanation. We want to know all the detail, and we think we could handle it if we got it. Most of the time, we couldn't, actually. But we think we could handle the explanation, and that would help us handle the experience. It's difficult and painful. Job is being taught by God. You cannot understand creation, and yet you benefit from it every day in life. You cannot control the universe around you, yet you trust the God who does and provides what's needed for you in the process. So you can't understand the trouble, the heartache, the grief, the bereavement, the tragedy, the unemployment, the financial crisis. You can't understand where that came from, why it happened, what God's big picture was in it. But come on, trust me. I only work for your good. I only work for my glory. I am the God who works all things together for the good of them that love me and are called according to his purposes. Just get a big, big picture of me. And you don't actually need the detailed explanation of all that you're going through in life. Let's pray together. Lord, we do battle with such thoughts in our minds and hearts. We do believe, like Job did for so much of these chapters, that if only you explain things to us, we could handle it and it would be grand. We feel ourselves rebuked from your words to Job, as you called him just to put trust and faith in the Creator and providential God. Lord, we hear that call to our hearts today. We try to apply it to our own personal situations, the things which are even troubling us already for the week that lies ahead. Help us to see you as a great big God in whom we can trust. And then help us to do it for Jesus' sake.